You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Everybody, welcome back into your latest episode of our crossover special here on the Locked On NFL Network. Our first one of this season, obviously none in the preseason that didn't exist this year due to COVID-19, but we are back for week one in the NFL season, and I am very excited here. I'm Evan Sidery, the host of Locked On Colts. I am joined by Tony Wiggins of Locked On Jaguars to preview Colts versus Jaguars. Before we dive into that, though, I wanted to give you guys our title sponsor of today's show, which is NFL Game Pass. This season, get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. See all the action from every game with full game replays. You can also replay an entire game and catch all the plays in just 45 minutes with condensed games. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. Tony, how are you doing today? We are back week one. It's been a long time coming, a very anticipatory time for me because no preseason football makes me think whenever football is going to come, it's going to be an awesome time. And it's definitely that time of year again. Tony, football is finally back.
No, it is, man. I'm happy that it's back. It's going to be a little weird. I think the first two or three weeks is going to be a massive filling out process for a lot of people, especially those teams that have new coordinators and new offenses to learn. And Jacksonville is one of them. You know, Jay Gruden is here along with, you know, new quarterbacks coach as well. So, you know, it's going to take some getting used to. I think there are going to be some bumps and bruises. I was out at training camp. It wasn't a lot of hitting, not a lot of physicality. So I think the guys are going to have to get used to that. They have 18 first or second year players that are in starting roles, 16 rookies on this football team. There's a lot of speed of the game to get used to here in Jacksonville. So, you know, it's always new to get the rust out anyway for guys that are returning. So this year Jacksonville has an awful lot in layers to get used to.
Let's start off here, Tony, to go over really the teardown rebuild that's going on in Jacksonville right now. Very steep on defensive end, too. You're getting a lot of draft capital in return for players. Obviously, like Jalen Ramsey started off last year midseason, went to the Los Angeles Rams, just inked a $21 million annual extension today for 5 years, over $100 million. Also recently traded Yannick Ngakoue, their star pass rusher, Calais Campbell, their defensive tackle to Baltimore for a fifth-round pick. Ronnie Harrison, their safety, just recently got traded to the Cleveland Browns. A.J. Bouye went to the Broncos. A lot of moving pieces on the defensive side, a lot of just pieces overall, Tony, being moved out here in Jacksonville as this rebuild is really commencing right now. What's your thoughts on just the moves the Jaguars made this offseason to really get a lot of draft capital, as well as just signaling towards a true rebuild year in 2020?
That's a word that they're running away from. They don't want you to call it that. Well, they don't tell you not to. But they don't really embrace it. They don't embrace it being called a rebuild. They're saying they're trying to win now. In fact, Doug Marrone was quoted today basically saying he can't afford another rebuilding year because he won't be around for it if they don't win. So Gardner Minshew doesn't believe if they tank, he'll have a job next year because everyone believes that they're going to go after one of those quarterbacks, mainly Trevor Lawrence out of Clemson. So he doesn't believe losing is conducive to him keeping his job. And Dave Caldwell, you never know because, you know, Shaq Khan, the owner, has been slow to fire people. You know, they were slow to fire Gus Bradley, the initial coach in, you know, in their regime here. And Dave Caldwell's still been around, even though 7 first-round picks in the top 10, I think only one of them is remaining here, you know. So it's crazy, man. But for me, you know, the thing is the narrative is now that all of those guys that left were problem children, and that's not true. Some of those guys left because of salary. Some of them left because they just – they're at a stage of their career where it's not conducive for them to be here with what's going on. So when you think of it like that, Evan, it is sort of a rebuild. If I hear the words come out of your mouth that they're too much of a veteran to go through what we're going through, then what you're going through is a rebuild, and you can't phrase it or frame it as anything other than that.
Let's talk about Gardner Minshew. You hinted at him for a little bit, Tony. A really surprised year last year. It wasn't expected to play, of course, because the Jaguars signed Nick Foles to a lucrative contract. Did not work out, of course, for Foles and Jacksonville. Minshew took over in the second half of the Chiefs game in their home opener and really ran away with that job. I know Minshew sat for a few games as Foles tried to get back in late, but it was pretty apparent throughout the year that Gardner Minshew was the future, at least through 2020, this Jaguars team at quarterback. How important is this year 2020 for Gardner Minshew, Tony?
It's very important for him because while it seems like they're stripping things around him, the one thing you hear that is a singular tone, whether it comes from the GM all the way down to even Jay Gruden today, is they really like the offensive line. Now, for the life of me, I can't understand it. I thought it was a weakness going into the offseason, but with 12 draft picks, they only added one player, and it was a fourth-round pick by the name of Ben Bartsch, who's from a small school. So they've really been preaching that they love their offensive line. They added Laviska Shenault and Colin Johnson in the draft, who both made the team. They went out and got Tyler Eifert, and they got a couple of different running backs to go with the committee approach that you've seen in other places like San Francisco. And like I said, they did bring in Jay Gruden, and they bought in Ben McAdoo, two guys with head coaching experience, to lead Gardner and run an offense that is conducive to what he does. Now, as far as he's concerned, he was a six-round pick who was way more ready to play than that. He was a coach on the field. If you ever hear him talk, if you close your eyes, he sounds like Sean McVay. That's how he comes. That's how the information just flies out of his mouth. So he can really, really impress you at the chalkboard. They thought about taking him extremely early. They had to fight each other almost, you know, not literally, but sort of hold each other back in the draft room to not take him early. And they held off until the sixth round. He's way better than that. The key is this: is he a franchise guy? And they can't answer that question. They're going to have to see what he does this year. The fans look at him as a guy who's really cool, talks really cool, wears cool clothes, and does these nice commercials. The coaches look at him as a guy who works really hard, who does everything that they ask, but now it has to translate to the football field. And some of the guys that got rid of didn't believe in him, like Leonard Fournette. So that's why you saw a lot of those guys jettison up out of here, so they can get the guys on the field that really believe in him, so they can take a true gauge and tell if he's the guy or not.
Like you mentioned, Leonard Fournette, he recently got released by the Jaguars. He got picked up by Tampa Bay Buccaneers a few days later. That was one of the Jaguars' main pieces on offense last year. Obviously, you have Minshew returning as starting quarterback. DJ Chark, I think, is a very underrated wide receiver in the NFL. I think he's going to have a big year this year for the Jaguars in 2020. Laviska Shenault, of course. Tyler Eifert, like you mentioned, at tight end. What's this offense going to look like this year, Tony, under Jay Gruden adding in these new pieces?
Well, what it's going to look like is you're going to have a bunch of different guys in the backfield touching the ball. I suspect you'll see a lot of single back. You'll see a lot of double tight end formations, sort of what you saw in Washington with Jay Gruden. You know, he had LaFleur, McVay, and Shanahan through his regime in Washington. So you'll see a lot of that stuff that you see with those guys, a lot of rollouts, a lot of different guys. One week you might see one guy catch eight balls. The next minute you'll see another guy catch a lot of balls. They're going to do what they did with the rookie out of Ohio State, McLaurin. What they did with him last year, they're going to do that with DJ Chark this year. He's a guy who was a Pro Bowl alternate. They're going to move him around and put the ball in his hands and kind of feature him. But then you're going to see the running backs. He brought Chris Thompson down here from Washington. You're going to see different guys. And that's one of the reasons Leonard was gone. Leonard is a guy who needs to touch the ball 20, 22 times a game. And he's better in his 18th carry than he is in his fifth carry. And that's just not what they're going to do anymore. They're not going to give the ball to one person and let him pound, pound, pound. They're going to really, really spread it out. And they probably didn't believe he was going to be happy doing that. And that's why they let him go.
Last one for you, Tony, before we transition on to some Colts talk and wrap up with some predictions for week one. It's crazy to say we're less than 4 days away from the Colts versus Jaguars happening here in Jacksonville for week one. But what's this defense look like this year, Tony? Because, of course, we mentioned all the guys who got traded off that defense over the last year plus, and especially over the last few months of this offseason, like Campbell, Yannick Ngakoue, et cetera. Obviously, you drafted Caleb on Chase on. You drafted C.J. Henderson, a corner, to replace Jalen Ramsey and be that future number one corner. Josh Allen, of course, the rookie edge from Kentucky last year, who had a really good year last year for the Jaguars, is going to be their main piece on defense. But what else is on that side for Jacksonville you should expect to watch for in 2020?
Let me walk it backwards. Josh Allen is the best football player on this team. Only played 60% of the snaps last year and had 10.5 sacks. That's going to be high this year. He's going to have a lot of pressure because he doesn't have a lot of those guys you just mentioned, those guys that were helping create pressure. So it is going to be incumbent that he gets help from those rookies. This is going to be a big year for Taven Bryan, who's 29th pick in the draft in 2018. And Taven Bryan was picked two spots ahead of Lamar Jackson. And people around here will never let the Jaguars forget about that. He has to really, really step up. You know, he's a big kid out of University of Florida. It goes about 295 pounds, about 6'4". looks like J.J. Watt in uniform, but doesn't quite play that way. And, you know, has had some moments where he's flashed. They also got a middle linebacker. They got a true middle linebacker for the first time in a few years in Joe Schobert. They signed him to a big contract out of Cleveland. And he's a pure Mike, and he's a three-down linebacker who can not only – he knows when to trigger and he knows when to fill those gaps, but he's a quarterback on the defense who also can play in coverage. That's allowed them to finally move Miles Jack to his more natural position that everybody thinks it is, to the wheel spot, the weak side linebacker. They've tried him at Sam. They've tried him at Mike, and he got a massive contract extension. He just hasn't lived up to it, you know. So Telvin Smith manned that weak side linebacker spot for the first couple of years Miles was in the league, and Telvin's not here anymore. They got to get that production out of him. As far as the secondary is concerned, it's a youth movement, man. You know, they drafted four corners, and all of them made the team, and then they got Luke Barku as a priority free agent, and he made the team too. So they got a bunch of young guys back there, and it's going to be a test for them. They're all very, very athletic. But if they don't get pressure up front, and even if they do get pressure up front, those young guys really, really are going to be tested, and they're going to be tested early to make sure they know exactly what they're doing. And if there's one weakness in Todd Wash's defense, even when he had Jalen Ramsey, and even when he had Barry Church, and even when he had A.J. Boye, guys used to be confused about coverage on the back end, and Lewis Riddick used to point it out weekly that guys did not really know what they were doing. So if those veterans and those talented Pro Bowlers were confused, you can only imagine what these young guys are going to be thinking.
Yeah, this Jaguars team on both sides of the ball, even though they are very young, a lot of key players traded off or released in the last year or so. A lot of people are expecting them to be one of the worst teams in the NFL, but I wonder if they're going to be one of those scribe teams this year, that if you play against them, it's going to be a dogfight, whatever way you go about it. They're not going to try to tank this year from the sounds of it, Tony. And it's going to be very intriguing to see how this Jaguars team comes out in week one. We're going to transition on to the other side of the week one matchup for the Indianapolis Colts, and Tony's going to ask me some questions as well before we get our predictions for week one. But a quick sponsor here is the NFL Game Pass. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, this season, get full on your time with NFL Game Pass. You can catch every snap from every game, full game replays, and see all the plays in just 45 minutes of condensed games. You'll learn from the league's best players in over 40 film session episodes and get access to the entire NFL Films archive. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. We'll be back with you guys in just a second to talk about the Indianapolis Colts with Tony and I. Alrighty, we are back for segment two of our crossover special. Locked on Colts, Evan Sider here. Locked on Jaguars, Tony Wiggins. Tony, now you have the floor now to ask me some Colts questions.
I'm going to start right at the very top, man. I'm going to start with Phillip Rivers. First of all, did he have any more kids during the offseason? Because, you know, Phillip Rivers, he's known to, you know, get one pushed out like every year for like the last 7 or 8 years, man. Did he have any more kids on his way to Indy?
No, he's still at 9, but I think that maybe the move-in process was a little much. He moved his family from San Diego area to Indianapolis. They're all living in Indiana right now, so a very big move for them. They moved there in June. And from all expectations, Rivers, there's a lot of excitement around Phillip Rivers this year in 2020, reuniting with Frank Reich.
Yeah, man. You know, I don't know if you know this, but he has a history of absolutely carving up the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I don't care what year it is. I think they've gotten him like one time. They got him here in the 2017 season. But other than that, he has had a field day with Jacksonville. And the way that you get him is you got to rush him up the middle. And right now the Jaguars defense, the weakness is up the middle. And the strength of the Colts defense, I mean, the offensive line, is those guys that protect Phillip Rivers from guard to guard. So how's he looked in training camp? And how are the receivers this year? Because I knew that they were a little bit unhealthy last year.
Yeah, on Rivers, he's really taking control of this team right from the beginning there, whether it be in the locker room or off the field or on the field, excuse me. You've heard a lot about Rivers. His completion percentage has been way up there throughout camp, or hovering around 70%. His best year completion percentage-wise was in 2013 with Frank Reich as his OC, when he had 69.5% of his passes completed. So it might be maybe back to that type of rhythm offense for him with Reich and Nick Sirianni, the Colts offensive coordinator, back with him from the San Diego days. And from all indications with the playmakers on the Colts side, it's done very well. T.Y. Hilton battled injuries, of course, a lot last year, but he looks like his old self with a better quarterback with Phillip Rivers on board instead of Jacoby Brissett. T.Y. might be more of a possession type receiver this year because Paris Campbell, the Ohio State receiver from the 2019 draft, there's a lot of rave reviews about him before he got a concussion throughout camp. He's going to be good for week one, though. He might be your deep threat, your explosive play threat. Michael Pittman Jr. is obviously the rookie from USC.
deep ball threat, 6'4", 225. Might be Rivers' new version of Benson Jackson, Mike Williams. So that'll be a lot of fun to watch. He'll be eased in slowly to this offense, though, because Zach Pascal, who started for the Colts last year, will be starting opposite T.Y. Hilton in week one with Paris Campbell in the slot. Pascal is a reliable player. Reminds me sort of like Jack Doyle at the tight end position for this Colts team. Just really reliable, never drops many balls, does his assignment perfectly. So I think this Colts playmaking unit at the wideout position is definitely improved. A lot of unproven commodities, though, with Paris Campbell, Michael Pittman Jr. But if T.Y. Hilton bounces back to normal and if Philip Rivers can find an early sink, which seems like they have so far throughout camp, this Colts offense is going to be a lot of fun to watch in the passing game.
It's going to be fun to watch in the passing game. And one of the things that makes the passing game fun is when you can counter that with a very good running game. Phillip Rivers had great passing game, but then he would counter that before it was with Melvin Gordon. And then we could go down the line of all the great running backs, all the way going back to LT and all of those guys. But last year he had Austin Ekeler. There's a very similar running back to him in Marlon Mack in Indy. So you got Marlon Mack, Nyheim Hines, and then you go over to the Northwest and get this kid out of Wisconsin, this bowling ball that everyone seems to think is a power running back, but the kid also has speed, a little bit of fumbling issues. But can you tell me about the rookie from Wisconsin and then tell me how they're going to implement those three running backs when they, what's the depth chart look like and how are they going to spread those carries around when it comes to getting on the field Sunday?
Yeah, for the running back group, obviously a lot of excitement around them too with this offensive line they have in place, Quentin Nelson, the guys up front there. It's a lot of fun to watch this running game when it's at full steam and full rhythm because Marlon Mack is your shifty player. He's done a lot of passing work as well throughout this offseason so far in training camp and putting in a lot of work on that end. And that hasn't been the case for Mack in his first couple years in the NFL, but with Philip Rivers, he loves to check down to his running back, so you might see more passing attack with Marlon Mack this year. And I think it's – Frank Reich is a really intriguing point about Mack and Jonathan Taylor. He calls it a 1-1 running back duo, not a 1-2 duo, which is really goes to show you how much they value Jonathan Taylor too because, like you mentioned, he's a power back from Wisconsin, but 4.39 speed, that's a rare package to have, almost like a Saquon Barkley type of running back. And obviously, he's going to have a better load on his shoulders this year. He had so much carries, I think over 1,000 during his 3 years at Wisconsin. And with Marlon Mack there, it's going to be Mack starting for the Colts. But with Jonathan Taylor, he'll be sort of the closer, I think, for this team, bruising teams in the second half of games and being able to really go at them when they're wearing them down in the fourth quarter. So that's going to be a lot of fun, I think. A really fresh Jonathan Taylor behind his Colts offensive line late in games to really bleed out the clock and help them out and be a really power running team. Marlon Mack, of course, is the shifty guy. But you can't forget about Nyheim Hines as well. He might be that new Austin Ekeler, Darren Sproles type for this Colts offense because at 4.3, 4.38 speed, he's really the exact same frame as a Darren Sproles, Austin Ekeler. He's going to be probably a variety guy in this offense, a very good special teams returner, but we saw when Andrew Luck was quarterback, he had some games, he had 8 or 9 catches. He's an explosive player when he gets the ball in his hands. So I could see maybe a 50-60 reception type year for Nyheim Hines as well. So the Colts have really three legitimate running backs here, Marlon Mack, Jonathan Taylor, Nyheim Hines, your third down running back. With Jonathan Taylor specifically, I think he's a player that later on in the year, maybe week 6 to week 8, he'll probably take that starting role for Marlon Mack because I think Jonathan Taylor is a beast of a running back. He has a rare package, like you mentioned, of speed and explosiveness. So I think behind this Colts offensive line, Jonathan Taylor is going to be so much fun to watch and going to produce big numbers as well as Marlon Mack. But when you think about this running back unit, this underrated wide receiver group with this offensive line, with Philip Rivers replacing Jacoby Brissett, it's going to be, I think, a very much improved offense. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain store front. So why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the cameraman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? One reason repairmen and maintenance guys use cars is to save money and make you maybe pay extra money. But with Rock Auto, they're able to save you so much more money. The Honda Odyssey fuel pump assembly for rockauto.com is it's $217 compared to the big counter stores, which is $354, which saves you obviously a lot of money in your pocket later on. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto part customers online for 20 plus years. They have everything from engine control models and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's your classic or daily driver, you're anything you need a few easy clicks to deliver directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specification, and price you prefer. And best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low and the same professionals do it yourselfers. So why spend twice as much for the same parts and get even cheaper at RockAuto? Write Locked On in the How'd You Hear About Us box over on rockauto.com so you know Locked On Colts and Locked On Jaguars sent you. They have a main selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. Go to rockauto.com right now.
I think it will too. And the key is that you have to keep the other teams offense off the field and get Philip the ball. So that brings us to the defense. Big acquisition. Teams don't like giving up first round picks, especially when they have to pay people. But that's exactly what the Colts did in this offseason when they went out west and got big DeForest Buckner. Got it. Really reminds me of a guy that left Jacksonville in Calais Campbell. He's like 6'7", 6'8", 300 pounds, can rush the passer, can stop the run. 4 years, $84 million, I believe, for the big guy coming in inside to play a little three technique. How's he going to fit in, and does he take pressure off of the other guy that is a tackling machine, who's Darius Leonard in the back? That gives you two players that are great players, I believe, in your front seven.
Yeah, the duo of Leonard and Buckner is going to be, I think, one of the best as far as linebacker defensive line duos in the NFL. Like you mentioned, Tony, Leonard's a tackling machine. He's been like that throughout even his rookie year. Last year, he was sidelined by a concussion for a few games, but then he bounced back right away and became a turnover machine once again. He had to get seven interceptions in a 14-game span, which just kind of shows you the type of athlete he is. And he had multiple sack games too. He's going to be a freak. He's going to be running around with DeForest Buckner opening things up for him, taking out the trash, so to say. Like you mentioned, 6'7", 300-plus pounds, all pro last year for the 49ers. Of course, giving away a first-round pick is a little rough on the surface. 13th overall pick, the 49ers drafted Buckner's replacement, Javon Kinlaw. But then you see as well with Buckner, he's able to be a force for this defense, be able to really take pressure off the defensive backs, the linebackers as well. And I think it's going to really elevate this defense on all three levels when you see that it's the impact Buckner is going to make for them. And with Buckner, too, I could expect a year where he either has a big sack production year or he's able to really help guys out like Darius Leonard or Justin Houston and make them better and really force a lot of double teams on Buckner throughout the year. So I think from all three levels here, especially at defensive back, where it's going to take a lot less pressure off those guys, it's a little unproven back there. You have Xavier Rhodes, Rocky Sin, Kenny Moore, who's a very good slot corner. But the pass defense struggled a little bit last year. If you just give him a few extra seconds less of throwing time, DeForest Buckner is going to really change that for this Colts defense. And you add him into the mix with Darius Leonard, this Colts defense is going to be a lot of fun and one that I think could really take a huge leap this year in terms of production.
Real quick, what happened with Malik Hooker? When Malik Hooker came out, I didn't think he was Sean Taylor because that's too much praise, but I really, really thought he had a tremendous amount of range. I know he got hurt because he got hurt in the Jaguars game. But it just seems like that's a name, you know, you hear trade rumors, you hear all of this stuff, and you just mentioned three guys in the secondary and nobody ever talks about Malik Hooker anymore.
Yeah, it's just Malik Hooker, I just don't think he fits well into this Colts scheme. He was drafted in 2017 by Chuck Pagano to run that 3-4 defense. We sort of that just that free safety type. But in Matt Eberflus's 4-3 defense, they really value tackling. They really value the ability to play out in space. And Malik Hooker can be a ball hawk at some points. You saw last year in week one that incredible interception he had, that one-handed one against Philip Rivers. But outside of that, just some really inconsistent moments from Malik Hooker. Is not a great tackler much at all. And the injury problems with Hooker are just consistent. We saw the Colts decline his fifth-year option this past year, while the player that was drafted the year before him, Ryan Kelly, just signed a 5-year extension with this Colts team. So it looks like on the outside looking in that Malik Hooker's probably playing his last year at the Colts. They drafted his, I think, future replacement with Julian Blackman, the Utah free safety, in round 3 to go with Kari Willis, who was a very good strong safety as a rookie last year for the Colts in the 4th round. So I think just from all indications, probably it's Malik Hooker's final year at the Colts, but it's sort of a prove-it year for him. If he does have a monster year interception-wise, I would not be shocked if the Colts brought him back. But just from the tackling standpoint, from the injury standpoint, just the consistency standpoint, I just think Malik Hooker's the best fit for this defense.
All right, so I said today I made my predictions, I guess it's yesterday, actually. I said the over-under for Jaguars were 4 wins, but I'm gonna give it a little bit of a disclaimer. I think it's going to be like that year that Garoppolo was hurt. You remember the 49ers were scoring all those damn points, man, but they were losing those games like 46-38 or 38-30, almost like the way Arizona played last year. I think they're going to score a bunch of points, but I think they're going to be scored on a lot, and I think they're going to lose a lot of games. But I think it's going to generate a little bit of excitement, but I still think they're going to pick in the top 5 of the draft. That's the way I think. What do you think about Indy?
Yeah, with Indy, I really think I put on my show a couple weeks ago, I think they're going to be a 12-4 team this year. Maybe that's a little ambitious, but I think overall they should be a 10-plus win team when you see the schedule they have. The first 7 weeks of the season, it's very cupcake soft to me. I could see the Colts starting off 7-0, and maybe that last final half of the year they could go around 500. But that first 2 months of the schedule really benefits this team. A lot of new additions, of course, but Philip Rivers reunited with Frank Reich. I think the adjustment period is going to be a little bit smoother than guys like Tom Brady in Tampa Bay, for example. So I think their floor is 9-7, but I think their ceiling is more like a 12-4 team. So maybe like an 11-5, 12-4 team is, I'm pretty confident saying that.
Evan Sidery off the top rope, man. We're going to do this again, man. So, you know, I'm going to bring the heat, man. I'm going to remember you said that. And if that happens, I'm going to have to send you a gift certificate for you to go have you a cocktail, brother. I'm going to tell you right now, that's a bold prediction, man, but I appreciate it though. That's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this Colts team is going to shock some people this year. I know many aren't talking about them yet, but I would not be shocked if this Colts team thought they're really hot starting to talk about Philip Rivers as being one of the most improved players from this past year. Before I let you go, though, Tony, and I've always enjoyed doing this crossover, especially with you from last year talking about the Jaguars. Who do you think is going to win week one? I know the spread on DraftKings is the Colts are 8-point favorites on the road in Jacksonville. Do you think the Colts cover that spread, or what do you think is going to happen week one?
You know, I want nothing more for the faithful fans of this city. You know, they go through a lot. They hear a lot of stuff from national media. And you know, people think that they're moving the games because of the fans. They're not. They're moving the games because they don't have a lot of Fortune 500 support. So the fans here are as good as the fans anywhere. And I always like to say this when I do crossovers. If you look at how many tickets they sell, not how big their stadium is huge. How many tickets they sell, they are nowhere near the bottom. That's all I got to tell you about Jaguar fans. So for that, I want to say they're going to win, but I just can't. I remember in 1989 when Jimmy Johnson had all of those rookies on his team. I just can't go for a bunch of rookies. They got 16 of them, bro. I can't, this is the NFL. If I say 16 rookies are going to win games in the NFL, I might as well say that a real good top five college team could beat the worst NFL team. And I've always said that that's a 50-point loss for the number one college team in the country. That's just the way I feel. So there's no way you can win and really be competitive with 16 rookies on your team. I hold firm to that conclusion. So I'm going to go. I think the Colts are going to beat them.
I agree with you. I have Colts 31, Jaguars 17. I think the Colts comfortably cover the spread.